नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानाधिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 11, entitled King Indra Annihilates the Demons. We're just beginning this chapter. I'll read the chapter summary. As described in this chapter, the great saint Narad Muni, being very compassionate to the demons who had been killed by the demigods, forbade the demigods to continue killing. Then Shukracharya, by his mystic power, renewed the lives of all the demons. Having been graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods began fighting the demons again with renewed energy. King Indra released his thunderbolt against Bali, and when Bali fell, his friend Jambhasura attacked Indra, who then cut off Jambhasura's head with his thunderbolt. When Narad Muni learned that Jambhasura had been killed, he informed Jambhasura's relatives, Namuchi, Bala, and Paka, who then went to the battlefield and attacked the demigods. Indra, king of heaven, severed the heads of Bala and Paka and released the weapon known as Kulisha, the thunderbolt, against Namuchi's shoulder. The thunderbolt, however, returned unsuccessful, and thus Indra became morose. At that time, an unseen voice came from the sky. The voice declared, "A dry or wet weapon cannot kill Namuchi." Hearing this voice, Indra began to think how Namuchi could be killed. He then thought of foam, which is neither moist nor dry. Using a weapon of foam, he was able to kill Namuchi. Thus Indra and the other demigods killed many demons. Then, at the request of Lord Brahma, Narad went to the demigods and forbade them to kill the demons any longer. All the demigods then returned to their abodes. Following the instructions of Narad, whatever demons remained alive on the battlefield took Bali Maharaj to Asta Mountain. There, by the touch of Shukracharya's hand, Bali Maharaj regained his senses and consciousness, and those demons whose heads and bodies had not been completely lost were brought back to life by the mystic power of Shukracharya. Text number 1. Please repeat. Sri Shuka Uvacha Atho Sura Pratyupalabdha Chetasaham Parasya pungsa parayanukampaya jaknurbhrisham shukra samirnadayas tan stan rane yairabhi sanghatah pura. Atha sura pratyupalabdha chetasaham parasya pungsah parayanukampaya jaknurbhrisham shakra samirnadayas tam stam rane yairabhi sanghatapura atho suraha pratyupalabdha chetasaham parasya pungsa parayanukampaya jaknurbhrisham shakra samirnadayas tan stan rane yairabhi sanghatah pura atho sura pratyupalabdha chetasa parasya pungsa prayanukampaya jaknurbhrisham shakra samirnadayas tan stan rane yairabhi sanghatah pura Go ahead. Ladies, Shri Shuka Uvacha, Shri Shukadev Goswami said, Atho, thereafter, Suraha, all the demigods, Prati Upalabdha Chetasaha, being enlivened again by revival of their consciousness. Parasya of the Supreme. Pungsaha of the Personality of Godhead. Paraya Supreme. Anukampaya by the mercy. Jaknoho began to beat Brisham again and again. Shakra Indra. Samirana Vayu. Adayaha and others. Tan tan to those demons. Rane in the fight. Yehi by whom? Abhisanghataha. They were beaten. Pura before. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, by the supreme grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, all the demigods, headed by Indra and Vayu, were brought back to life. Being enlivened, the demigods began severely beating the very same demons who had defeated them before. Please repeat. Shukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, by the supreme grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, all the demigods, headed by Indra and Vayu, were brought back to life. Being enlivened, the demigods began severely beating the very same demons who had defeated them before. There's no purport here. And the acharyas have nothing to say on this verse either. We'll go on to text number 2. Vairochanaya samrabdho bhagavan pakashasanaha udayachadyada vajram prajaha ha heti chakrushuho. When the most powerful Indra became angry and took his thunderbolt in hand to kill Maharaj Bali, the demons began lamenting, alas, alas. The word Udayachad, Sridhar Swami says, just means unninye, to lift up. Now, there's actually one thing we can note in the last verse. Tanstan rane yeyadabhisanghata pura. Those who had been killed or slain before on the battlefield, each and every one of the demons who had attacked them, the reduplication in Sanskrit of a word like tantan, means each and every one of them. That's something that is also reflected in Prabhupada's translation. Just thought I would note it. Now, in text 3, he continues, Vajrapanistamahedam tiraskritya purasthitam manasvinam susampannam vicharantam mahamrithe. Sober and tolerant and well-equipped with paraphernalia for fighting, Bali Maharaj moved before Indra on the great battlefield. King Indra, who always carries the thunderbolt in his hand, rebuked Bali Maharaj as follows. Now note some of the words here used to describe the demon king. He is called Manasvinam and Susampannam. Susampannam means literally well endowed. Manasvinam means intelligent. Srila Prabhupada translates them as very sober and tolerant, because an intelligent person will be sober, hopefully, and tolerant. A really intelligent person. And susampannam means Well endowed, Srila Prabhupada explains this is well endowed with paraphernalia for fighting, but also Bali Maharaj had very, very good qualifications, which we're going to see later on. And he was a recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form as Trivikrama, Upendra, Lord Vamanadev. So, what did Indra say? Text 4. Natavan murhamaya bhir mayeshan no jigishasi jitwa balan nivadhakshan nato harati tadhanam. Indra said, "Oh rascal, as a cheater sometimes binds the eyes of a child and takes away his possessions, you are trying to defeat us by displaying some mystic power, although you know that we are masters of all such mystic powers." Again, there's no purport here, but there are some interesting comments by the acharyas. Sridhar Swami says, first of all, that he's telling him, just, you understand that this is my power. And aruruksatye arohamichanti. You desire to elevate yourself. How? Utsisripanti, the word is used. Utsisripanti means ulanghayatum. He wants to overcome his own position. And that was not very much appreciated by Indra. Sridhar Swami actually says he wanted moksha. Moksham ichanti. He and the other demons. That's the idea. So, ato vidhunomi patayami. Therefore, I'm going to dispatch you, Indra says. I'm going to make you fall. Vidhunomi is the word used here. I will force you to go down. That's in the next verse, so we'll go on to that one. Now, before we do, though, the word nata means an actor. Actually, it means an entertainer of any sort. Srila Prabhupada has translated it here as a cheater, because an actor is, after all, cheating to some degree, isn't he not? He's not really the person that he makes you think he is. He's acting only. And similarly, nata, it's a word with many connotations. It means an entertainer generally, a dancer. Female dancer is nati. Sometimes that's considered a prostitute also. She's also deceiving people, men, into thinking that she loves them when she doesn't. So nata also has this connotation of being a cheater, and therefore Srila Prabhupada is quite justified in translating it as he has. Natavat, just like a cheater or a rogue. And he's not only a rascal, but he's also murha. He's a fool. Why? Mayabhir, mayishan no jigishasi. He says, you want to, with your mystic power, you want to defeat us, even though we're the ones who actually are giving you this mystic power. I think someone raised a question the other day that by whose grace do these demons have the power that they have? By whose grace does anyone have the power that he has? Sri Hari, very good. So, Mayesha, we are the lords of Maya. This is what he's saying. We, us demigods. Demigods, of course, also, we know from Brahma Samhita, whatever opulence or whatever ability they have, it's coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. Similarly, the demons also, they're ultimately gaining their powers, maybe through the demigods, but they're coming ultimately from Govinda. So whether we're a demigod or a demon, it doesn't really make any difference if we're an illusion. Someone once asked Srila Prabhupada, if the spiritual master knows everything, then how many windows are there in the Empire State Building? Anybody know the answer? Prabhupada said, immediately, without missing a beat, he replied, how many drops of water are there in a mirage? So similarly, The demigods and the demons, they're fighting about their perceived authority, adhikar. Adhikar means prerogative, authority. The ability to do something, therefore the authorization to do that thing also. Prerogative is maybe the best way to translate it, because prerogative means both, the ability and the sanction. So the adhikar of either the devas or the dhanavas, it's coming ultimately from the same person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prahlad Maharaj therefore told his father, when he was asked, where are you getting your power from that I can't kill you? He said, I get it from the same place that you get your power from. That's coming from Narasingadev. Of course, he didn't say Narasingadev. Nobody knew about Lord Narasingadev yet. But he told him it was coming from Vishnu. Anyway, both the devas and the demons, they're actually to some degree ignorant of this, but at least the devas have some authority. There is a system in place for universal harmony and what Krishna calls, we might translate, social solidarity, loka sangraha. There's a system in place for achieving that. Therefore, it's not insignificant that in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada gave amongst his last and very much notable instructions, he told us, your desire to serve me will be shown by how much you... And he also gave the means of that cooperation, practically in the same breath, when he at the same time emphasized that Varnashram Dharma was the remaining 50% of his mission. Because you cannot act outside of your nature. Dharma means the intrinsic property of a thing. You can cheat, but it will not be effective. And you cannot cheat the demigods, and you cannot cheat Krishna. You can only cheat some demons, maybe, but many demons are more powerful than us, including Bali Maharaj himself. Otherwise, how is it that he's described in this way? Manasvi, very intelligent, very capable. Susampannam, very much accomplished or well endowed. So Indra, it's described here that he's quite angry, and we can see that in this verse. Yeah, what else does he say? Well, we'll read on in the next verse. Nata, maybe means a magician, somebody who shows tricks, or somebody who deceives you by any means. That's a good point to note. Now, we'll come to text 5, which actually has a purport. Arurukshanti maya bhir utsisrip santi ye devam tandasyun vidhunom yajnyan purvasmat chatpadad adhaha. That means, those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world or liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe, Indra says. Let's read this again. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world or liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe. Here, it's an interesting point. First of all, we've already described that... Ulankhayanam means to overstep one's bounds, to try to do something more than he's qualified to do. In other words, to transgress dharma, because dharma implies adhikar, real adhikar, the actual prerogative to do something. Every species of life, every personality type, every varna, every ashram, every position in this material world has its corresponding swadharma. The swadharma corresponds with the swabhava. The body and mind, complex, are awarded to the living entity in accordance with the living entity's desires and the living entity's karmas. The fusion of those two being called swabhava, your consciousness, your state of mind. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajanti ante kalevaram tam tam evaiti, Krishna says. Whatever is the consciousness generally at the time of death, that's where you're going. And the system of universal cooperation or universal management or harmony is that everyone has the adhikar to do a certain thing and not other things. Twice in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us that we have to do what we have the adhikar to do. Anybody know? Sway sway adhikarma? What is that verse? Anyway. He says that a person should be engaged in his own occupational behavior. And in this way, samsiddhim labhate param. A man can achieve perfection. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam says, sway sway adhikare yanishtha saguna parikirtata. A person who is fixed in his own prerogative, or her own prerogative, does not attempt more than that allows, and will not settle for less than what that allows. That person is actually situated in qualification. He's actually susampanna, as we described Bali Maharaj. He's qualified, but in a different way. Here, Jiva Goswami has pointed out to us that utsasurpantityatra maya bhir yoga balehi. The word utsasurpanti, to move higher or to try to position oneself, to be socially, I would want to say, upwardly mobile, maybe is a colloquial way of putting it. He says, when that's done by mystic power or illusory tricks of the sort that the demons are capable of displaying, that's not really the real qualification. That is an overstepping of one's authority. He says, natu bhagavad atrayaneti nyayam. It should be understood that it's not coming by the grace of God. And what does Krishna say for such people who try to enjoy without offering sacrifice in return? What is the verse? Chapter 3. He calls them what? Yeah. Ye bhunkte stena evasa. Those people are thieves. They've stolen something. Rather than follow the system, do what you're supposed to do, achieve the natural results, and move up through that process, we want to overstep the system, or evade the system, or reinterpret the system. Somehow or other, we want to do something other than what we're supposed to do. That is the demoniac tendency. So, therefore Indra is angry, because Indra is the person who has to coordinate these things. When a person steps outside of his or her dharma to do something else, it upsets the entire ecological balance throughout the cosmic manifestation. And who has to clean that up? The demigods, headed by Indra. Therefore, he's angry. Just like when British Petroleum loses a mine in the Caribbean Ocean, or off the coast of Alaska, or wherever it happens to be, it creates a huge mess, and somebody has to go and clean it up. It's the same thing. So, that is in the material world. Therefore, the Bhagavatam actually says quite plainly that, as Indra is saying here, Patayami, I'll throw you down. The Bhagavatam actually says that those who are trying to aspire to get out of this dharma system, this karma system, these people are actually, the demigods sometimes attack them. Whether you're a demon or even if you're a transcendentalist. Now, we can note here in the translation to text 5, Srila Prabhupada has incorporated something that Sridhar Swami told us in regards to text 1. What is that? Moksham ichanti. These demons actually wanted to get It would seem they wanted moksha. Now, does moksha mean spiritual liberation? Generally it does, but it means liberation of any sort. Whether they want freedom from the authority of the demigods, that's another kind of freedom, you can say, or whether they want spiritual liberation, it doesn't really matter. The point is that if somebody tries to get out of the clutches of the demigods, they're just as exploitive as anyone else in this world. They don't like it. Therefore, the 11th canto tells us, sometimes the devas themselves will put some obstruction in the path of an aspiring transcendentalist, a sadhaka. And we see in that case, there are so many yogis in particular, they're meditating and actually getting some tejas, some power, as a result of their focus. If you focus a magnifying glass over here, a mile or so down the road, in the Baldwin Hills, on the dry grass that comes there in the summertime, you can burn the whole thing down. That's focus. That's the power of focus. When a transcendentalist is able to focus in what Krishna calls vyavasayatmika buddhi, on a goal that is outside of the system of the devas, they don't like it. And therefore they send obstructions in the form of puravachitti or urvashi or some other apsara generally, because that's the most fascinating attraction in this world. But everyone has his anarthas. Some people fall to money. Other people cannot control their anger. For some people it's the opposite sex or even the same sex nowadays. Everybody has some point at which they fall, and this is known by every CIA agent. You can break any man. Any conditioned soul can be broken. You just have to persevere and find out the appropriate means. So don't be proud. Every one of us, I mean we don't know what kind of test is in store for us 6 months down the road. We don't know. Maybe 2 weeks, maybe tonight. Who knows? Anyway. Therefore, Indra is angry, and he wants to frustrate these demons because they're upsetting the karmic balance. The system of dharma is being... It causes problems for somebody. Somebody has to pay the bill, folks. There's no free lunch. If you don't want to pay the normal standard method which is advised in the Shastra, you're going to have to pay in some other way. You'll go to hell, or the demigods have to come up and clean it up for you, or somehow or other it has to be adjusted. Because it's a closed system, and it's a symbiotic one. It's an ecological thing. This is why we have nowadays in scientific circles what they call deep ecology. Anybody know what is deep ecology? It means, you know, they're looking at the very fundamental assumptions of the ecology movement in a very deep and philosophical way. And they actually come to some of the same conclusions that are taught already in the Vedas, that everything is requiring some balance in this world. And we have to respect nature because it's perfect. These are things that every scripture teaches. So the demons, they don't care to do this. The demigods try to do this, even though they sometimes fail. And devotees sometimes, most of the time, devotees also do this. Sometimes devotees, in special circumstances, will transgress dharma under Krishna's authority, but it had better be under Krishna's authority, because it's not under Srila Prabhupada's authority. Okay, so these are a few things we can think of, preliminary things based on the comments of the acharyas. What else do we have to say here? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, well, from Sridhar Swami we've learned that this utsisirpanti means to transgress, and particularly it means to desire moksha even when you're not qualified. For that, Indra is prepared to throw you down, or other demigods as well. Jiva Goswami says that this power of the demons, by which they hope to do so, it's not given by God. It's not a result of their taking shelter of Bhagavan. Rather, it is through the yoga balai, the power of, mystic power, you can say, of maya. They're playing around with maya, just like the tantrics. Sometimes in India we see Tantrics, they're a little bit feared because they do have power. They can do things that we cannot understand. But that's maya, yoga, bala. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti says, Utsasripanti, divam apyang ulanghayatam ichanti, maharaloka adishu apyadhikartam ichanti tyartaha. He actually uses the word adhikar, which we've dilated on a little bit. They want to transgress the higher planetary system's rule. They even maybe want to go higher than those higher planetary systems. Also, that's what they aspire to. But what does he say? It's very interesting. He says, "Purvasmat rasatalad apyataha patayami." In the voice of Indra, he says, instead, I'm going to throw you down lower than you were when you started. Where does Bali Maharaj live? Sutala. That's in the Rasatala planetary system. Therefore, he says specifically, Purvasmat, even more than before, Rasatalat, from this Rasatala, lower than this Rasatala system. Adhapatiyami, I'm going to throw you down there. I don't know where that is. But it doesn't sound very pleasant. And Indra doesn't sound like he's very happy with this situation. So Bali Maharaj is going to find out what is the wrath of Indra. I mean, these demons and these demigods are constantly fighting. Nobody ever really gets the upper hand forever, isn't it? Don't we see this? Sometimes the demigods win, sometimes the demons win, because they're all rascals in Krishna's view. They're all rascals. Whether you, just like illicit sex, Prabhupada will mention here in a moment. Whether illicit sex and illicit sex, what is the difference? There's no difference. In absolute perspective, it's the same thing. It's equally evasive. It's what the Bhagavatam calls ishad apeta, turned away from God. So, now, all these things are incorporated nicely into Srila Prabhupada's translations, but it's good to get an overview of the Acharya's commentaries, because now we can see where Srila Prabhupada goes with this and what he says in his purport, which is one of these purports that Prabhupada gives every once in a while that could not have been written by anyone else and could not have been written in any other social milieu or at any other time in history. Srila Prabhupada says, there are undoubtedly different planetary systems for different persons. That kind of brings to mind the idea that everybody is exactly where he's supposed to be if he's acting within dharma. There's a time and place for everything, in other words. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 14:18, urham gacchanti sattvastaha, persons in the mode of goodness can go to the upper planets. Those in the modes of darkness and passion, however, are not allowed to enter the higher planets. The word divam refers to the higher planetary system known as Svargaloka. Indra, king of the higher planetary system, has the power to push down any conditioned soul attempting to go from the lower to the higher planets without proper qualifications. That is to say, without, what is another way to translate qualification? Adhikar. Adhikar means prerogative, it means capability, qualification, authority, sanction, etc. The modern attempt to go to the moon is also an attempt by inferior men to go to Svargaloka by artificial, mechanical means. This attempt cannot be successful. From this statement of Indra, it appears that anyone attempting to go to the higher planetary systems by mechanical means, in other words, by what Jiva Goswami has called mayabhir yoga balaihi, by, you know, some kind of mystic power, some artificial means other than dharma, this is the point. So, which are here called maya. The person who is trying to go to the higher planetary systems by this maya is condemned to go to the hellish planets in the lower portion of the universe. It's very strongly implied here by Srila Prabhupada that the attempt to visit other planets through modern space travel is actually sinful, and one has to go to hell as a result. All the evidence that we've observed so far in the statements of the acharyas very clearly indicate that trajectory. To go to the higher planetary system, one needs sufficient good qualities. A sinful person situated in the mode of ignorance and addicted to drinking, meat-eating, and illicit sex will never enter the higher planets by mechanical means. Srila Prabhupada ki. I mentioned that this is one of those purports that no one else could have written, and in no other time would it have even come to mind. Because we are living in an age of unprecedented human decadence on every level, whether you look at it financially, politically, spiritually, religiously, biologically, ecologically, environmentally, financially. I mean, how many ways do you want to count? We sometimes wonder how long it can go on, or whether it will go on. I mean, maybe a spring cleaning is in order. Is that where Ebola is heading nowadays? We don't know. At any rate, demigods get mad. This is the point. One of the take-home messages here, written between the lines, is that if you get Indra angry, he has the power to throw you down below where you were. One astrologer once gave me the advice when I was in a Saturn period. He said, just lay low, let it pass, do not try to fight it. Because if you try to fight back with the application of your own karma, then all you succeed in doing is ending up lower than where you started from. And that's exactly what we're seeing here in this verse. It's explicitly stated so by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and it's clearly implied by Srila Prabhupada as well. So, anyway, you can say there's a lot to talk about here, actually, but I want to end early. I'm sorry, I just don't have time to continue. So we'll take a few questions then. And Bana Bhatta Prabhu?
Thank you, Mukundada Prabhu, for a very illuminating class. My question that came to mind is Vishramitra Muni, who apparently became envious of Vasishtha Muni and therefore engaged in a very, very austere kind of penance by which he would develop all kind of mystic powers. And of course, it's a long history. He meditated for a long time. And I think Urvasi or Menaka was sent, and he fell down, and then he engaged again in practice. But then we see that he actually came through with his austerities to the point that he became almost an equal to Vasishtha, in the sense that he was actually, you know, part of Ram Leela, and actually, you know, got intimate association and was instructing Ram and Lakshman. And I'm wondering how all this fits in with what you were saying in terms of, you know, not having the qualification to become elevated.
Yeah, this is a very intricate question, actually, because he wanted to be a Brahmarshi, is it not? He was a Rajarshi before, and he wanted to be a Brahmarshi. He was always had that degree of subtle envy. Even amongst the sages, sometimes there's envy. And the significant thing is that he focused on systems that were authorized in order to obtain his objective. He didn't try to buck the system. He worked within it. And even we can see, actually, amongst demons like Hiranyakashipu, they're also following practices. I mentioned tantrics also. It's even more visible. They're actually following practices that are given in the Vedic literature. And in that sense, they're authoritative. And you can say, in some sense, they're dharma, but the motivation is impure. And so, you know, even you get the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but do you get pure love of Godhead? That's the question. So, as far as I can see, in his case in particular, he was following authoritative systems, and therefore he actually succeeded in changing his nature. When the Swabhava does change, and the Swabhava will change, but it takes a long time, generally, then the corresponding Swadharma also changes. So a person can go from being, say, a Rajarshi to a Brahmarshi. It's possible. Now, when we take to devotional service, to whatever degree we take to devotional service, and especially if we have the objective of pure devotional service, then the same thing happens, but it happens on steroids. It's very, very fast. Prabha. I mean, it's very, very, very powerful. It is the most powerful means of actually purifying the heart. Therefore, on some occasions, Srila Prabhupada also said that although he wanted us to practice and establish within ISKCON this Varnashram Dharma, he also acquiesced that even if you can't do it, then that's okay, just chant Hare Krishna. It will get you to the same place, but it actually makes it easier to chant Hare Krishna if you follow the Dharma, if you're not a dharmic, because after all, there's no such thing as Vikarma Yoga, is there? There's Karma Yoga only. There's no Vikarma Yoga. And to act outside of the authority and the sanction and the instruction of the Vedic literature, that is the definition of Vikarma. Now, it's therefore significant that in chapter 16 at the end, Krishna tells us, how do you know what to do and what not to do? How do you discriminate? What does he say? Who knows the verse? Karya karya vijanataha yasha tasmat chasram pramanam te karya karya vijanataha. You should act on the basis of the shastra conjunction. That's what he did. That's my immediate impression. Is that okay? Anything else? Bhrigupati Prabhu.
Translations, how Indra has this power to send people down if they're not cooperating with the Dharma. So, what is Lord Shiva doing? And it seems like Lord Shiva is awarding powers to people who are definitely a dharmic. I mean, Vrikashura would be a classic example, and you know, he even has a name, Ashutosha, mm-hmm. easily pleased, easily angered, Bhutanath, he's the Lord. So, where does he fit in the picture?
There's a need for everyone. I was going to mention, but I overlooked this point that Prabhupada is emphasizing, actually, in his chapter summary here. Who is it who's actually instigating this whole thing with the demons and the devas fighting? Narad Muni. He tends to do this on occasion, does he not? He did the same thing with Kamsa, and from time to time, Narad Muni just steps in and seems to facilitate the bad guys. That's because there are ultimately no good guys and no bad guys in this karmic system, which is another way of saying anybody within karma is ultimately a bad guy. This is called Parodharma, or Jaiva Dharma, or Sanatan Dharma. The real Dharma is surrender unto the personality of Godhead. All these other dharmas are meant to bring us to that point, and they're extremely helpful, even for devotees, which is why they appear in the Bhagavatam, which kicks out Kaitava Dharma. But ultimately, one has to admit that these things are bahya, as Ramananda Rai said, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his conversation with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The really intrinsic thing, the essential principle is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So Shiva is actually facilitating demons in the same way that Narad Muni is facilitating demons, because demons have to be there. Now, to get really interesting, I can mention that Madhvacharya, among the Vaishnava Acharyas, he describes what is liberation for the demon. Demons he calls tamo-yogya, suitable only for tamo-guna. He says that there are some jivas who do not have the capacity to move beyond that. And for them, the perfection of Dharma is to act like demons. Don't laugh. It's actually in other Puranas as well. It has authority. So, you know, to maintain this cosmic balance, you have to have this dynamic tension between the devas and the demigods. And it's all part of Krishna's politics. What does that mean? I mean, we have politics in ISKCON, but Krishna has his politics, which means that Krishna will always be very careful not to squelch the demons entirely and not to squelch the devas entirely. He has to facilitate all of them because he has to be equal to everyone. It's kind of like in chapter 12 when Arjuna asks Krishna, who's better, the Mayavadi, the impersonalists or the devotees? Krishna kind of gives him a very, you know, it's a little, he hedges around the question a bit. He says very clearly the answer, but he also, well, you know, but then again, he kind of gives them scope. He has to do this. Krishna has to facilitate the free will of all the jivas. Therefore, he's political in that way. And the devotees, recognizing this necessity also, those who are as advanced as Narad Muni is, they sometimes are also acting in that way. Lord Shiva is also acting in that way. Bhutapati, who else is going to take care of the bhuts? None of us want to deal with them. Somebody has to deal with them. Somebody has to elevate them. Therefore you have tantra. Therefore you have these tamasic yajnas. And I mean, it's dharma in a sense, but not for us. Therefore I said, sve sve adhikare yanishtha. If you claim to be a Vaishnava, then you have to follow the Vaishnava dharmas. And the other things for you are adharma. And to take it a step further, we can say that exclusively in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, those who would follow Srila Prabhupada, for them, Varnashram Dharma is not external. It is an intrinsic aspect of pure devotional service, because it is the order of the spiritual master. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagno brahmanahutam ityadi. That's the logic. Does that answer your question? It's they're deep questions, these things. Anything else? Somebody over here. Karuna Dhanini.
You were speaking about being in harmony with nature, and I'm just wondering, because sometimes when I'm driving a car or I go for a long airplane flight, and I know there's so much petroleum used in that, and I know that so much contributes to global warming, and I know that devotees, we have a tendency to travel a lot because for a variety of reasons, traveling, holy pilgrimage, and preaching, and, you know, it's all that is necessary and good, but I'm just wondering how we can understand that.
Well, this is another big topic. When I was in Seattle, one day a frenzied colleague came into the office in the Department of Asian Studies, and she said, I was walking down the street, and suddenly there was a huge wave of police presence. You know, in India we call this a lathi charge, coming at us with batons and shields. Because this was during the World Trade Organization protests in the 1990s. They had their meeting in Seattle, and there were riots in Seattle. And I saw myself, police were out there en masse with tanks. I mean, it was a precursor of what we see ordinarily nowadays. But the idea is that many people are not satisfied with the New World Order. And one aspect of that is, you know, this artificial dependence on fossil fuels and the activities required to maintain that artificial dependence. So many people are being killed in the Middle East. And those who are not being killed feel like they're under attack, because essentially they are. One author named Rajiv Malhotra describes this as cultural digestion. When we talk about a tiger eating its prey, we don't talk about a harmonious assimilation of two cultures. We talk about the dissolving of one by the other. Sociologist, what is his name? Ashish Nandi, I think. He has a cartoon on his website, shows it, the Coca-Cola logo, familiar. But it's in Arabic. And the caption reads, "Is this your idea of respect for other culture?" So people are sometimes irritated by this. My point is that when I was in Seattle, there is a great deal of transportation available in the city there. And so I didn't keep a car because I didn't have to drive. Unless you have to drive, you should understand that there are reactions for that because it's unnatural to drive a car. It actually impacts this environment. It's undeniable now. People used to try and deny it. They can't do that anymore. It's now undeniable. Its sinful reaction is there. And who's going to pay that bill? Somebody has to do so. So be careful. If you're not using your car exclusively and unmotivatedly in Krishna service, then be very careful. And the same thing actually applies to everything else that we do in this world. It is a very, very touchy situation. And human life alone is the life of responsibility. We have to know these things and we have to act in response to them. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we have to end here. I'm sorry, but thank you very much for listening patiently. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.